2 Overdrive, TSN 1050. Watching on TSN 4. It's Mail It In Friday. Andy Petrillo filling in for Brian Hayes, who's on vacation. Frank Corrado is filling in for Jeff O'Neill, who had major dental work done today.
Yes.
And is at home resting, maybe with an ice pack on his head. I don't know. A little bit of some painkillers there. And Noodles, you are the only regular here. You're holding it down.
Carrying
you are
us.
The rose between two thorns right now.
I don't know. You guys are fighting about high schools. All hell's breaking
loose. It's almost like Noodles is the goalie, and Noodles, there, you had 8 defensemen on your roster, but 3 went down, and you had to call up 1 from the minors, and you're rolling into a back-to-back, and you're in net, and you're like, I got to deal with this call-up tonight.
No
Hopefully
way.
He doesn't get on for more than 8 minutes.
What's even better is when you don't know the roster, and you expect all hell to break loose, and that's the best part. The best shows is when all hell is breaking loose. Andy started it off. I mean, I was expecting, I don't know, a Friday show, kind of like a, you know, Mail It In, Motley Crue, something like that. And we got dance music.
Yeah.
And we got all sorts of things rolling around. But Andy, I know how you roll. So you drive the bus, so go ahead. I'll defer to you.
And it's a Friday, and I appreciate it, and I love it.
It is. It's great. And you know what? Like, I know it's hard. I'm not going to bring it back to the Leafs because I know it's still a fresh kind of wound. But, like, how many people have you talked to around here going, man, oh, man, like, what if, coulda, shoulda, like, you know, Austin Matthews had a great season. Would have liked to see him go McDavid or McKinnon or Vasilevsky, like that type of stuff. That's the kind of feedback I'm getting from people, you know, around here when I have to stop in chats. It's like,
yeah,
that's what I'm waiting for. You know, I'm sorry, what they say to me, that's what they're waiting for is, you know, go legend in the playoffs like McDavid has done. Like
yeah,
McKinnon.
But you know what? We said this yesterday. Like, first of all, McDavid hasn't, correct me if I'm wrong, like, this is really the first playoffs where you're looking at him going, holy smokes, he's been good in the past.
Right.
And then there was one where he was injured, right? Like, I don't know how much he played. I can't remember. I think a while back, right? But
right.
It's just like, this is the first time he's also doing that, because there's been some shots against McDavid in the past where he was somebody who, you know, needed to work a little bit more in his defensive game, or this was somebody he even had said, I need to go to the net more. Like,
yeah,
right.
He didn't always shine like this. This is bananas, I think, what he's doing.
Right.
Nathan McKinnon, also crazy, but he has a little bit more of a track record of doing it. He was. Wasn't he already, like, doing things? Like, I think it was Gretzky said.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he was, like, Gretzky, Messier, and Lemieux. Like, he even said it. He's like this trifecta of us, right?
We're in this market. Like, we're in this market, and we're almost blinded by the Toronto Maple Leafs at times, right? And, you know, is Matthews and Marner, are these guys going to propel the team to the next round? But I would imagine if you're living in Edmonton coming into this year's playoffs, you're like, it's the same question with McDavid and Dreisaitl, because if they lost in the first round, it's the same questions that we're asking every day about the Maple Leafs in that market, right? Like, we're always talking about these guys because this is who we're consumed with. I find I have a good gauge on, I guess, your stopping chats and your kind of local guys talking about the Leafs at the golf course. Right. So I'll roll up in the afternoon on a weekday or in the morning on a weekend. And I usually get a couple stop and chats from people. And as the years have gone on, they're like less fired up now. Like before it was like very, like a lot of conviction. We need to do this. We need to do that. Trade Nylander. This guy stinks. Like, and all this kind of stuff. And now it's like, I don't even know. I don't even know what to say.
See, like, that scares me, because the worst kind of feeling that can set in is a lack of feeling, is apathy.
Yeah.
The second that sets in, you as an organization, you've got to be
getting.
Careful.
That's what I'm getting from the guys at the golf course. That's a good gauge.
Apathy is correct. There's people that are beyond frustrated because, you know, let's be honest, this year was, if you're a Leaf fan, it was exciting because you're watching, like, I mean, I believe through, they were the third healthiest team in the NHL. So they didn't really have any massive, like, you know, injuries or, you know, that type of stuff. Jack Campbell was out a little bit here or there. I mean, like, there were guys that missed games, but you didn't have this, like, you know, a Winnipeg or Montreal situation.
Yeah, it didn't derail your season, right?
Right,
like, if you lose the big guys, you're in one for a while.
So, So you've got that. You have a team that gets 115 points. You've got a star player who gets 60 goals and sets a record. You know, so Mitch Marner was on pace, 97 points. I believe it was 10 to 12 guys that had career high seasons as far as points and goals, stuff like that. Michael Bunting, pushes through. So there was just so many tremendous storylines that you're like, okay, and I know we've talked about it, at length on this show so many times. You're sitting there going, well, let's see what they got in the playoffs.
Yeah.
And they played very well in the playoffs, but they just didn't get over the hump. There's coulda, woulda, shoulda. And, there were a lot of different opportunities. I think game six was pivotal. You've got a lead going into third. You've got to close that out. Like, ultimately, on home ice, or, no, it was on, was that out on the road? And,
yeah, it was on the road, and I know we got Johnny online, but the funny thing I always get is like, the refs knew what they were doing, calling those high sticks. Like, what do you mean? Like, if they were in on it, you'd use the air quotes in on it. Wouldn't they want the Leafs in? The Leafs generate more money than every other team, right?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. People are funny with what they say about the Leafs in the playoffs this time of year.
Listen, I get these emails from all kinds of like betting companies or research companies as well, because they're looking for coverage, whatever. And I got one recently, like last week. And it was a research company that said the most beloved hockey team in Canada, and this, like, a lot of people are going to drive off the road right now. Toronto Maple Leafs. They have the most fans across.
Oh, 100%.
The country. Well, they do. I wouldn't argue that. They got the biggest fan base. Absolutely,
yeah.
Montreal would be right there too.
Yeah. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline is someone who appreciates my music taste. And that would be Mike Johnson, who's covering the World Championship. What's up, Mikey?
Hey, we got a little Debbie Deb to bring me in. Come on, it's Friday.
Yes!
What's it today?
I had it to start the show, and these guys are giving me crap.
Wow. I mean,
they
MJ.
Don't know, Andy, they don't know what's up. They don't know what it's like Friday. Before you get ready to go to the club up in Woodbridge, they don't
Palazzo.
Know. You got to get a little something to get you going. Palazzo at Highway 7.
Thank
Absolutely.
You. Thank you, paparazzi. You name it.
So let me get this straight, though, MJ. Like, that's the clubs you were going to when you were in high school and all that. There's no chance.
Scarborough guy, coming up to
Woodbridge. Yeah, I was just going to say, you and your buddies would go and fight people in Woodbridge. You wouldn't be going to go to dance clubs.
Johnny, no way. Johnny doesn't fight.
He's probably got some hooligan buddies that backed him up.
Johnny was shooting pucks in the garage on Friday nights, getting ready for the NHL. That's what Johnny was doing.
That was not true, Frankie. I wish I would have. But no, Noodles, yes, I would go out up on Highway 7. I went to a very multicultural high school there in Scarborough, and so I had some buddies that liked to go downtown to one kind of club. I had buddies that wanted to go up to Woodbridge to a different kind of club, and, I didn't mind the dance beats. That was a regular stop on our rotation.
Wow.
Yeah.
We gotta, just for old time's sake, we gotta hit up a nightclub. But did you just say glow sticks?
Yeah, you think Johnny had the glow sticks going?
That just brought back memories.
He had one for a necklace and walked in, sweater around his neck, and khakis on, just dancing up a storm.
Let me tell you something. I went to this one nightclub where there was a dude, I don't even know if he was like a paid go-go dancer or he just showed up and thought he was the cat's meow, but he always wore the white gloves because of the black light, and then he would do all this funky stuff with his hand, and his hands would be flying everywhere. Ooh, I was like, maybe that was you, Johnny. I was like so mesmerized. I was like, look at him with his fancy hands in the black light.
Maybe one of my best avoided long-term nightmare situations was that, Noodles, you might not know this, Frank, you might be too young too, but there used to be a show called Electric Circus.
Yes.
Which was basically shot out of Much Music in downtown Toronto.
Monica Diol.
It was like a bad, cheesy dance party, like on Queen Street there, people dancing on risers or whatever and doing the latest music. So when I was young and a pro, somehow they found out that maybe I saw someone at a club or whatever and bopping around. And like, you should come host and like come dance on the show. I'm like, yeah, I'd love that. Could you imagine if that videotape still existed?
Oh!
Hosting and dancing on a riser at Electric Circus?
I'm so upset this did not happen.
I would never have made it one more second in the NHL if that was the case.
I would start a GoFundMe page right now to get a hold of that video. That would make it.
Wait,
make
did you actually
dollars.
Do it or you didn't do it?
No, it never came to fruition. You can look all you want. It never, ever happened.
That
but
is
I was close. I was game, which was so, tells you how dumb and young I was. I'm like, yeah, man, that'd be great. It would have been a disaster.
Listen, Electric Circus was the place to be. Like, you watched all the time. I said Monica Diol, stunning. Loved watching her, too. And I loved it. That was a great show. You know what else was a great show? What the Canadians have been putting on at the World Championship. Just when you think they're down and out. Mike, you know, we thought it last year. Here they are. They fight to get to the semifinal. What is it that's standing out about this team? What would you say is the strength of this Canadian side?
Their strength is probably their centerman, really. You know, they played really well at the beginning of the tournament. They've kind of got a little bit worse as the tournament went along. And then they find themselves down 3-0 to Sweden. And you're like, okay, you know what? It was a good run. Not going to happen. Sweden never gives up goals. And then here they come. Crazy comeback, 2 goals with the goalie out. But when you can roll Pierre-Luc Dubois, who has been a stud in this tournament, like, just even opened my eyes. I know I'm quite familiar with him, but I'm like, I didn't know he had this kind of skill to his game. Then you follow that up with Matt Barzal, who, when he's on, is electric as anyone. And then your third line center is Adam Lowry. Like, that's where they're better than any other team in this tournament. You know, their defense maybe not as much, their structure maybe not as much, goaltending there may be question marks, but their depth down the middle and their talent up front is better than anyone in this tournament. And that's what's going to get them over the finish line if they get there.
That's where I was going to go, MJ. You know, you get a close look at some of the players that maybe you're not as familiar with, don't cover as much. Is Dubois the guy that stood out for you? Because I actually did a couple Winnipeg games this year, and he's a guy, I think, that pushed through this year as has had the chance to be a really impact number one centerman. And that, obviously, with the rumors of Scheifele and that, I think, you know, it'll be an obvious evolution, I guess, for him to push out Scheifele and become that lead dog in Winnipeg.
Yeah, he really has been the team MVP so far. And we know he's good, obviously. We've seen what he's done in the NHL. But when you watch him up close, and what's neat is our broadcast position is in when it was in Helsinki, we were probably 15 rows up. Like, we were right on the ice. So you could get a really good sense of the stuff he does well. I probably didn't realize how strong he was, because he just fends guys off like it's nobody's business. And I probably didn't realize how skilled he was. He makes a lot of really good plays with the puck in tight spaces. So, yeah, he's really impressed me for sure in this tournament. And the other guy who I like has been Damon Severson, who from Jersey, You know, he's not a perfect defender, but he's one of those guys, and now he's probably not as good as Thomas Cavalier, but I kind of make that comparison where, you know what, maybe in his own end he's not perfect, but as a forward, he's a guy that gives you all the service you can handle. Like, the passes are perfect, the breakout passes, like the shots to the net. When he has the puck on his stick, it is really a high-quality game. So he's been another guy at the back end who's probably been impressive so far.
Johnny, Drake Batherson with 11 points in 8 games there. And, you know, I was lucky enough to play with him in Belleville in the American League. And, you know, I played with Formanton and Norris and Brandstrom. And, you know, you could see that there was a solid core kind of forming with these younger players. But, you know, Batherson's the kind of guy, obviously he missed a lot of time with the ankle injury this season, but he just keeps getting better and better and better. Do you think at some point here in the near future that young core in Ottawa takes the next step with Batherson leading the way?
Yeah, he'll be one of the main pieces, absolutely. Now, his tournament, his year was, I mean, he was a point-a-game player heading to the All-Star game before he got, you know, snookered by Aaron Dell with a cheap shot that kind of ruined his year. And to start this tournament, he wasn't very good. They put him with Matt Barzal and Kent Johnson. And I think Matt Barzal's a very unique player, and I don't think it really suited Batherson kind of like forechecking in tight places around the net kind of game. So they moved him to Dubois and Dylan Cousins. And he's been lights out good since then, and his ankle looks great. So, yeah, like, I think when you think about Ottawa, and you think about, you know, Brady Tkachuk and Stutzla and Josh Norris and Batherson, and they're going to get another high pick here. They got Jake Sanderson. So they're close. They need a goaltender. They need a top 4D. They probably need one top winger, and maybe that's Kevin Fiala. A lot of loud rumors about Kevin Fiala leaving Minnesota, and Ottawa would be a good destination for him. And who knows, even Matthew Tkachuk, if he's playing at Calgary, who knows? But that will take them. My only concern, though, for Ottawa, and I love all those players, Chabot in the back end, all that, is that all those forwards I just mentioned, and defense and everything, they're really, really good. Are any of them great? Are any of them like world-class top 10 players in the NHL? Top 20 players in the NHL? No. None of them are. So it feels like, you know, you'd love to have a superstar mixed in with all those other good players, which they don't quite have.
Mm. So we know for the Canadians, Johnny, they're going up against Czechia in that semifinal. What can they expect?
Watch out for the first line is the Boston Bruins, David Krejci, David Pastrnak, and Roman Cervenka. Noodles will remember him from Calgary.
Yeah.
When they signed him as the best centerman outside the NHL, and he's like, I've never played center before, but anyways.
Yeah.
The three of them have been lights out good since Pasta's got over here. 5-on-5, and especially on the power play, Andy. You do not want to put them on the power play. They're really good. They got Tomáš Hertl in there. They got Hronek on the back end. They have Vemelka from Arizona in net, who's been really good in this tournament as well. But it really is the strength of that first line. They do the bulk of the scoring. So if you can control them somehow, if you can limit your penalties, then you'll give yourself a decent chance.
MJ, I wanted to ask about the Swedish team because I spent a year in Sweden 2 years ago playing for Modo. And it's very similar to Canada in the sense that they take their international hockey very seriously, but this tournament especially, because all the players from the SHL, all their big Swedish players, they want to play in this tournament. And for them to lose in the quarters, it's a pretty big deal. Like, I still follow some of the online accounts and publications that, you know, similar to your TSN here in Canada, and they're pretty unhappy with how things went. And I think this coach faced a lot of heat last year for the team that he brought to the tournament. So, you know, like, what's the vibe around the Swedish team losing in the quarters to Canada?
Not good, Frankie. It's not good.
Yeah. It can't be.
They're
not good.
No, they're, I mean, last year they finished ninth. They didn't even make quarters.
Yeah.
No. And then Johan Garpenlöf is the coach. He is leaving the program after this tournament. And Aftonbladet, which is our version of what, like, the biggest paper in Sweden, has been pretty critical of him. He was a defensive player, and they hate that he has built his national team game plan around his image.
Yeah.
Very passive, very defensive, and
big,
not really pushing.
So, big players.
Yeah, big. Yeah. But they got, you know, they got up 3-0 and they stopped playing. The shots the last two periods of the game were about 35-8 or something like that. Like, you know, they just stopped playing, which has been a problem for them. So yeah, they'll be bitterly disappointed. Now, having said that, they were a puck over the glass away from winning the game and on to the semifinals, and it's a very different story. But I think generally the last couple of years, I remember, you know, leading up to the Olympics, the same kind of story. They're too defensive. They left talented players at home. They left offense at home. They're just trying to play like our coach once played the NHL. So we'll see what the new guy comes up. I'm not even sure who the next national team coach is going to be, but I would imagine it'll be a departure from the passive defensive structure and maybe a little bit more offense, a little more dynamic, because they have lots of talent on the players. They just don't let them play that way.
Johnny, I'm not sure if you're staying up to watch any of the NHL games or you're catching them in the morning or whatever. I'll just ask you,
it was a good goal. That's my answer.
Okay, yeah, I understand that. But here's where I'm going. Did you pick Edmonton in five? I'm not sure anybody did. Like, did you see that coming?
Nope. 100% not. I picked Calgary in six. Now, some things I probably didn't factor in enough. One, Jacob Markstrom in the regular season was not good against Edmonton, and he followed up the playoffs where he was even worse. And I'm not exactly sure why, but an .853 save percentage is going to get you a lost series every single time. For a guy who was a Vezina caliber goaltender, he played nothing like that. That's an issue. Maybe I should have given more credit to the way Edmonton handled him during the regular season, because, you know, they put a lot of goals past him there. I think the injury to Chris Tanev was more significant to the structure and the top four of Calgary than maybe we thought. We thought maybe the system would be enough, but without him, you had your Branson playing up bigger minutes, you had Zadorov playing up bigger minutes, and they were not up to the challenge of playing against McDavid and Draisaitl. And I think we fell in love with the idea that the big line could handle anything in Calgary, and they could not handle Connor McDavid. You know, they were not up to that. Well, nobody's up to count with McDavid and Draisaitl right now. So I was surprised, but maybe I shouldn't be. And I think I probably just didn't give Edmonton enough credit for maybe how well they played down the stretch under Jay Woodcroft. Mike Smith's ability to still play at a high level, even when he has the odd crazy moment, whether it's a bad turnover in the first round or it's a goal from the far end in this round. And, you know, he just has a way to shake it off and play pretty well and make the saves he needs. So I did not see that coming. But good on Edmonton. I mean, this is good for them, and I think it's good for the league. Like, I think Connor and Leon, for that matter, he's right there as well. Like, the two of them playing deep in the playoffs, playing in you know, in America on those networks, being exposed that way, like, that's good for the league because those are two of the biggest stars that are, you know, underexposed because they've not gotten there before.
Johnny, looking ahead to tonight, it's going to be Colorado and St. Louis, and, you know, we know what happened last game. But for Colorado, this could go one of two ways, right? You could park what happened and move along, and it's a little bit of a bump in a road, little adversity, and it builds you and makes you stronger. But what if it's a little, what if it's the pressure? What if it starts to slip and you know, you don't get off to a good start tonight? What do you kind of expect from Colorado coming out of that last game?
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. And, like, you think there's pressure on them now because, I'm, you know, they get up 3-0. They're thinking, we got this cooked. They get McKinnon's crazy goal with 3-4 minutes left. They're like, oh, we got this. And they still find a way to lose it. Now they got to go back to St. Louis and all of that city entails for that team. And while I think they're going to be fine, I think they're mature. I think they're going to be just okay to, you know, to park it and to move past it and play really well. And I think they likely win tonight. If they don't, Frankie, where does the pressure go then?
Oh,
for it, yeah. You know, it's the same as Toronto is what it really is. You know, Toronto, it's the first round. For Colorado, it's the second round.
Yeah.
And can you imagine what the reaction would be if Toronto was up 3-0 and blew a, you know, that lead and blew a late lead then lose game six? And so you'd be, you know, you wouldn't be human unless you had a little seed of doubt creep into your mind if you're Colorado, which is why I think it is so important that they play well and win it tonight, because game seven, it all sits on Colorado, then all the pressure, all the possible negative outcomes are all on Colorado, and that might weigh them down. So they're such a good team. I didn't love how Darcy Kemper looked in that last game for Colorado.
No. He looked, I thought he was bad. You know what? If he was just okay in that game,
they're through.
You're through. Like, I was so disappointed, Johnny. I said this yesterday. Nathan MacKinnon had the Connor McDavid type of effort, hat trick. He pulls the team, you know, 4-3 with 2:49 left in the third. You know, he pulled his weight. You know who didn't? Eric Johnson, Darcy Kemper. If you look at that game tying goal, like, they've got opportunities to make plays, to defend, to be a lot better. And Kemper, and then, you know, the Bozak goal in overtime. I know there's a little seeing eye in there, but you got to find a way to make that save, ultimately. And that's what's disappointing for me, because I'm looking at that Colorado team, and Nathan MacKinnon, that was a statement that game he had, and his team let him down. And if they let him down tonight, game seven, guess who knows how to win? The St. Louis Blues. Right. They're battle-tested, right. So they've got to win tonight. I think Colorado has to win tonight, because if it goes to a game seven, I think St. Louis knows what to do in those situations. So I'm concerned for Colorado. They've got to find a way. And it's not Nate MacKinnon. It's his teammates that have to bail him out tonight if he's just average or less.
But if they don't get it done, no one's going to remember the end-to-end rush. Like, no one's going to remember that. None of it matters. No one's going to remember Nas responding to all of his noise. It all goes out the window. And all those skeletons, all that scar tissue kind of creeps back into the conversation. So, and Darcy Kemper's had such a good year. He's been so steady. Plays in a good team, so he doesn't have to be brilliant, but he's been steady as required. I was almost, you know, disappointed for him personally that, you know, in a moment like that where his team gave him four goals, not that it was just his fault, but that he was not able to get it over the finish line. I think, it just picked away at old scabs that you thought were healed, and now they're kind of back bleeding a little bit, and see if they can stop it tonight.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty incredible, too. I mean, you just look at what Nathan MacKinnon has done in the playoffs, because it's not just this year. This is a perennial playoff performer. You know, what he also does in the regular season, too, it's pretty remarkable. And now Connor McDavid has just elevated himself to a completely different level. So we'll see if we get that McDavid-MacKinnon showdown. Mike, appreciate you taking the time. We're looking forward to the semifinal game at the World Championship tomorrow.
All right, squad, have a good weekend. And Andy, a little paparazzo on a Friday night might be just the trick.
Listen, I might have to dust off the old dancing shoes and do something like that. We got some Electric Circus on the TV now. Look at this. This is gold.
This is before my time, I'm not going to lie.
Really?
MJ's there. There he is on a speaker dancing.
No, he's outside
in
the line.
He's outside peeking in. Hey, he's taking a peek.
You were just waiting in that line up there.
Can you imagine? Could you imagine?
Yeah, I'm really disappointed. That's a tease. I really wish that existed. Anyways, AJ, we'll talk to you later.
All right, guys.
That is Mike Johnson joining us on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota. Frankie, you're young, but I remember that. And I was actually too young to be on it, and I was waiting desperately to be of age. There's Monica Diol. And I was waiting so I could be old enough to get on the show, and then it didn't exist anymore.
What a shame.
It was so disappointing.
What
there was
a
also
shame, Andy.
Speaker's Corner. Like, that was a big one, too. Which I think they tried to revive that, or maybe they do have some sort of version of it now. But they would actually air it. Like, at the time, at the end of the week, anyone who stumbled into that, you know, video booth and recorded whatever message, it was like a dedicated hour, I think, on City TV.
Just
where they would
buckled.
Just,
all these
yeah, they just
shows,
play them.
All these shows have changed so much, too. Like, I used to race home from school to watch music videos. Who watches music videos anymore? Do kids even know what those are at this point? I don't even know if they make them anymore.
Well, I think that people make them, but it's just the natural. Like, people make those TikTok videos. Like, I think there's people
TikTok.
Like, people like, you know, men and women, like, they husband and wife do, like, choreographed things and, like, music
that's
and
not
dancing.
For me.
And switching outfits and stuff. I'm like, I don't have enough time in the day to do that.
No.
I'm not on TikTok.
No.
TikTok or what's the other one? I don't know. There's.
I just remember we were on vacation. So we were a couple years back, we were in the Bahamas, and there was a couple there. And this dude, I mean, he was doing his girl a service. Like, he was getting down on the ground, taking photos. She was there in her like, all
pretend
kinds
influencer.
Of stuff. And my husband just turned around, looked right at me, and said, "Don't you ever expect me to do that for you. Ever."
I know.
No,
I'm like,
chance.
Don't worry, babe. I ain't doing it. Right?
0%
like, it's just,
chance.
Yeah, it's not my thing.
Either. I don't have time for TikTok. I got a puppy. That's very, very busy.
Everyone's both have busy. Puppies.
Yeah. Yeah.
How
yeah.
old's yours?
4 months.
I'm 3 months.
Yeah. Yeah, so you know,
I've got two of them. They're kids, though. They're
yeah,
little animals.
You know what? So
I've got to feed them right away too. So I mean, that's like they're we and all
they,
have children.
What do you think's harder?
They pee
What's
everywhere,
harder, a puppy
bite
or a newborn? What's harder?
Well, a newborn, like flat out, doesn't sleep. You got to feed them every couple hours. Like a puppy, like I say, I wouldn't know what to do with it, but I feel like a backyard would help with a puppy.
Yeah.
Whereas you can't throw the newborn out in the backyard because they're screeching.
No, you can't put the newborn in a crate
either. Like, I'll put the puppy in the backyard. She just starts eating things, and you got to go wrestle, take everything out of her. It's a whole
wood chips. My hostas are destroyed. Don't even talk to me about my plants right now. I mean, chews on your furniture. My first dog ate my walls, so this one I'm like, don't you... Dare. But what kind of puppy did you get?
It's a little, it's a Bichon toy poodle. Cute little thing.
Oh, that's like really little. That's like, what, 7 pounds?
I think she's up to like 8.5 now.
Wow.
But she's buzzing. She buzzes around the house. There's like a 4-hour window at night where it's on. And it's
always
just a gong
night.
Show. Yeah.
Witching hour, always at night.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, listen, I'm not going to get into puppy. We had some puppy talk yesterday where we got James Duffy to admit that he does have a doggy stroller. So.
Yeah, but the dog was like handicapped or something.
Was dog? Okay. Yeah, I don't think.
Yeah.
I think
I saw
she has...
that on Instagram.
The dog was like missing a leg or something.
Not
like
missing.
That.
I just don't think her back legs function.
You got to give the dog a good life, right? The dog didn't ask for you. You asked for the dog.
Hey,
yeah, that's
preaching
fair.
To the choir. But I just said a wagon might be a little bit better than the
wagon,
the stroller.
That's true.
Yeah. Andy Noodles and Corrado are here on Mail It In Friday Overdrive. Keegan Matheson. We're going to talk some Jays. He's coming up. Darren Pang. We'll talk Colorado Blues. And apparently we are going to do a Dear Andy P. So I think the Grappler's going to jump on, maybe read some of these things. So I know Friday you guys like to do Dear Andy P. I will try to bestow some pearls of wisdom. So send those in. It's all coming up on Overdrive. It's Overdrive on TSN 1050, TSN 4. Andy Noodles, Frankie with you here on Mail It In Friday. Frankie Corrado filling in for O-Dog, who had some dental work done today. Very ambitious to think that he was going to come on in, but he's at home resting.
He's going
to
gut it out.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you saw the group text, Andy. I was praying that the dentist was like, listen, this is all we had. We're just going to put him in for now. And it was like, you know, corn nuts, barbecued corn nuts, like three of them are like, you know.
I wanted them to give him the laughing gas.
With three barbecued corn nuts in there in the front teeth for the next 2 weeks. We've got some on back order here, some teeth for you. But
just yellow, too, so used. And you just dip them in coffee for an hour and a half.
Exactly. Like just something so that we could just have a little bit more fun with it. But I'm hoping he's all right. I'm sure Monday he'll be fine. But yeah, Frankie on call. I love it.
Yeah, it resembled getting called up, you know, back in the day. Like, so I had a couple times when I was playing for the Utica Comets in the American League. And if you're not familiar where Utica is, because why would you know where that is? It's in upstate New York, like 45 minutes east of Syracuse. So
it's gritty.
It is very gritty, but a very undercover, sneaky little upstate town. Like, upstate New York is a little bit of a hidden gem. I loved my time there. But if you got called up, like, there was one time Travis Green was the head coach. He calls me in after morning skate. We had a game. He goes, "Hey, you're going up and you're playing tonight." I said, "How's that going to work?" He goes, "Well, you're going to get a car from here to Syracuse. Then you're going to fly Syracuse to Toronto. Then you're going to have a 2-hour layover. Then you're going to fly Toronto to Vancouver." They're going to fly you first class Toronto to Vancouver, though. Have your pregame meal at the airport and then just go straight to the rink. And you're playing against the Penguins tonight. I was like, okay, it's going to go well. Yeah.
Yeah, you're not going to be tired at all.
No, I think I played 5 minutes, but pretty good 5 minutes. I'll take it.
Yeah, well, you also recently sat down with Sean Fitzgerald of The Athletic, and
yeah,
you just talked a little bit about where you are in life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, a little chat.
Yeah, you did, and obviously, but you did touch on it. I know you've touched on it before,
yeah,
just like how difficult your time was here in Toronto.
Yeah.
How do you get through, you know, the seasons like that where you're not playing, and maybe what's even worse is you're also not really being told why?
Yeah, I know. It's just it was an unfortunate set of circumstances, and it was nobody's fault.
Nobody's fault.
it was interesting because I came in, you know, started my pro career very, very hot out of the gate as a just freshly 20-year-old going to Vancouver right out of junior, playing in the playoffs. And there was like two regime changes while I was there, right? It went from Gillis to Linden and Benning, and then AV got fired, then Torts came in, and then I played for Torts, and then Willie Desjardins came in. So, you know, in the 2 years that I was there as a pro, there was a lot of turnover. And, you know, what happens is if you're not heads and shoulders above other people, you kind of get a little lost because people want to bring in their own guys. And you know, we ended up going to the Calder Cup playoffs my second year in Utica. Sorry, the finals. We lost in the finals, and I was banged up. Like, going into that summer, I had like a torn AC joint or separated AC joint, had a broken bone in my hand, finished the playoffs, and admittedly had a pretty brutal training camp in Vancouver. Definitely not deserving to make the team. So I got put on waivers, and when I got picked up by Toronto, I really thought it was a lifeline, and, you know, getting a chance to play for Babcock was like, holy, like, this guy, I think my mindset at the time was like, guy, just be a sponge, like, absorb everything you can, because this guy is going to turn you into a legitimate NHL defenseman. All you need to do is just be present every day, and it's just gonna, you know, it's gonna happen. Work hard. And if that did not happen, I don't know if you guys noticed, I'm sitting here right now, but it never really turned out the way we thought. And
this is good for TSN, though.
It is.
Sure.
Plus, you've had it's not like you haven't battled some injuries.
Yeah,
too,
that came after. But, you know, and I think I got a good opportunity in Pittsburgh after Toronto, and I just think that the mental toll that my time in Toronto, I don't think I was the Frankie Corrado that I was at 20 years old. I think there was a little too much baggage with me, and I don't think I played the way I could have. I don't think I carried myself the way I probably could have off the ice there. So, you know, there was a little bit of that, but, you know, I think all that kind of stuff has helped me in life. Just, you know, be who I am today. It is what it is, and I think that kind of stuff just helps shape you. Mm. Not to get too philosophical on you here, Andy.
No, but you know what? There's things that I, you know, obviously I've been covering sports for a very long time, and I know that a lot of dressing rooms are different, and they all function in different ways. But the prevailing, you know, kind of philosophy, obviously, is that if you're a healthy scratch, if you're an injured player, a lot of teams, like a lot of head coaches, don't want that player around the team. Now, more and more that we're learning with sports psychology, they're actually saying if you want a guy to actually heal, you know, I mean, yes, okay, it's a physical ailment, but still, from healing to also still emotionally being invested, it's the opposite. You should actually be keeping him around. But, you know, Noodles, I know you've obviously been a part of that era, too, where it's like, How weird is that? How hard is that when you're on the road as well?
Yeah.
And guys are going to the rink. And I know some guys might want to go earlier on their own anyways. But typically, you have a bus.
Yeah.
And you all go together. Yeah. And you're always kind of separate.
Well, yeah. And so it got to the point at one point where Babcock came up to me. He's like, just take warm-up every single night. Just go take warm-up. You're not playing. You're probably not going to play for a while. But just take warm-up. Like, all right, like I'll go out there for a 50. I just did my skate in the morning. You bag skated me. I worked out. I'm going to do another workout tonight, but let me go play some soccer before the game and take warm up for a game I'm not going to play. But, you know, it was fine. And then there was times where it was like, don't take warm up tonight. It's like, okay, well, 4:30 bus leaves. I'm still at the hotel. I'll grab a little bite and I'll make my way over to the rink. And I think the thing that bummed me out the most was, you know, and Noodles, you can attest to this. You come out of a game, a spirited, competitive game, and that's where you make like these really close bonds with guys, right? And that kind of carries over is into the dinners and the nights out and, you know, the off days doing stuff. And so when you're not really around that, that's when it's tougher for you. You feel like you're there, but you're not really there.
I agree. It's just you don't feel like you're part of it because you haven't been in the battle with them.
You're part of the team,
but you're you know, there's some things that you just miss out on. We'll get into this more because there's lots of, you know, meat on that bone to chew sure.
Yeah. I mean, it's just you feel excluded. You feel left out. How can you be part of a team when you just don't feel part of the team? Keegan Mathieson, we're going to switch gears a little bit, talk some Blue Jays. They're coming off a win last night. They're playing the Angels again tonight. So Keegan Mathieson of MLB.com is going to join us and answer our questions about should we feel secure about the Jays or what is going on with that offense. So that's coming up next year on Overdrive. Back here on Overdrive, TSN 1050, watching on TSN 4, Andy Noodles and Corrado joining you here. Brian Hayes on vacation. O-Dog recovering from some dental surgery. Toronto Blue Jays are coming off a 6-3 win over the Angels last night. They'll be back in action again today. And, I mean, nice to see that output. But obviously the overarching theme when it comes to the Jays, of course, has been their offense. So let's bring in Keegan Mathieson of MLB.com, Blue Jays reporter. How you doing, Keegan?
I'm doing well. How's everybody today?
We are fantastic. Yeah. It's Friday. We are looking forward to the weekend and looking forward to seeing if we can actually see a trend here of the Jays' bats kind of picking up. Obviously, Vladdy gets, you know, another home run games there back-to-back where he gets one. But, you know, the numbers don't lie, Keegan, and that, you know, the Jays are, you know, the worst team, obviously, when it comes to, you know, hitting when they have players in scoring position. This is a team where Montoya's tried everything in changing rotation and trying to get them going. Is it time to look outside the team? Or is that hitting a panic button too soon and trying to bring in reinforcements and he should still try and work with what he has?
Yeah, I don't think it should be time just yet. You do have some internal prospects. Gabriel Moreno will come eventually. There's some help, but there's so much talent here. When you look down through this roster with Vladdy and Springer and Bo Bichette, you have Teoscar Hernandez is off to a really rough start so far in 2021 games. The talent is absolutely there. And what we're seeing is completely unexpected. You know, this was not supposed to be a team that pitched its way and defended its way to a winning record whatsoever. It was supposed to be a lot of 10-8 wins, you know, some ugly games, but exciting games. And it's been completely different. It really makes me question why I bothered previewing the season whatsoever. I hope we can delete some stories. But it's been amazing to see the change in this. And like you mentioned off the top with Vladdy, I think we talk a lot about runners in scoring position, plate approach, and that list gets longer and more boring as you go. The easy way for this to change is always going to be a superstar player doing something. And we're seeing a bit of that from Vladdy right now. Need to see a bit more. But this is not even specific to baseball. This, the easy way for this to happen is for one or two of these real star players, and they are star players in this league, to just put the team on their back for a few days, and then you finally, maybe, get to that point where hitting becomes contagious, like they always say it is.
Rio, you know, pitches five innings in the 6-3 win, leaves with, I believe, his elbow tightness after 65 pitches. Are you concerned about his health moving forward, even for his next start?
You have to be a little bit, because this goes back into even last year, guys. We heard a couple of different times very similar wording from Ryu. It would be a bit of tightness or inflammation in an elbow or a forearm, but he'll be fine for the next one. And a few times he has been. More recently with that forearm issue, he missed some time. And if there are two words you do not want to hear as a pitcher, they are elbow and forearm. So every time you hear those body parts, it's not good news. But he knows his body pretty well at 34 or 35, wherever Ryu is now, and he's dealt with this a lot before. You know, you see it with players like Lourdes Gurriel, for example. He always gets hamstring tightness. He comes out for a day, he's fine the next day. So some guys have recurring issues, but there will never be a time where I hear elbow or forearm with a pitcher, and don't worry a little bit. So that's one to keep an eye on this week.
Keegan, I'm filling in for Jeff O'Neill, the O-Dog, today, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about his boy, Alek Manoah, who is also my boy. And, you know, what did you make of his being pulled after eight innings, 83 pitches last week against the Reds? Were you surprised by it? Would you have let him stay in and finish the complete game? What was your take on that?
Not surprised by it because I watched too much baseball, unfortunately, in 2022, but I would have loved to see him get that chance. I mean, especially Manoah. You know, he is a guy who, number one, let's start, I do not want to be the dude taking the baseball from Alek Manoah after eight innings that good. Like, he is one of the very few players who is both taller and wider than me. This is a big, big dude. I don't want to be that guy. But you see where the thinking is going in baseball now, wanting to get it to Romano. Not a move that I love seeing because you love to see the complete game. A guy check off a real cool stat like that that we don't see enough of whatsoever. I love those 250-inning starters. That's really a dying breed right now. But Manoah has just been absolutely fantastic. And I don't know if we even appreciate how good this has been doing it again and again. Because not that it's easy to come up and dominate, but you see it a lot. A guy comes up who can throw high 90s with a great slider. MLB hitters haven't seen him. They're not going to spend all day on this new kid, and they win. You know, the young starter can get some outs. But once you see him a second, a third, and a fourth time, and if you're Aaron Judge and Stanton and the Yankees, you're saying, man, we don't want to let this guy beat us again, and you really prep for him, and he's still getting you, that's where this becomes really impressive with Manoah. And, man, if there's one guy on this roster that really wraps up the fan base, really wraps up Toronto as well as him, it's amazing to see.
How confident in Danny Jansen are you for the rest of the season, you know, and how patient will they be with him given that Moreno is waiting in the wings?
And he is earning a lot longer look right now. And with Moreno, he's still 22. Yes, he is the next big thing. This is the number four prospect in all of baseball. You know, that's even higher than Bo Bichette was ranked before his debut. But Jansen is earning this. He already had the full trust when it came to managing a pitching staff. What I love about what Jansen has done is that he has looked at this and said, listen, I hit to the pull side. I'm going to sell out and try to pull some home runs. I think that's awesome. You know, we hear so much talk about trying to hit to all fields. Yeah, in a perfect world, every hitter hits one-third, one-third, one-third across the outfield. That's never going to happen. So if you are a guy like Jansen, who is at a bit of a crossroads in his career, is he a starter? Is he a 1B? Is he a depth guy? Who knows? He said, this is my strength, and I'm going to lean into it and see if it works. And, man, it really has. So the next adjustment for him will be pitchers realizing this and saying, okay, this catcher is trying to pull everything. Let's try to mess with that. That's going to be a pretty tough adjustment. We'll see how that goes this next month, I think, is the really big one. If he sustains this a bit longer past that adjustment, you get really optimistic, but full credit to him, and he's absolutely turning that into less of a conversation, I guess, with Moreno right now, which is great news for him.
We got a minute here, but I do want to get your thoughts on this, Keegan, as they are taking on the Angels, because we've discussed this before, where Mike Trout is like this all-star, this superstar who just doesn't get treated like one. I guess, you know, he just doesn't, he's not out there. But then you have Shohei Ohtani as well. So when we're talking Angels, who's just more appealing for you to watch from that kind of superstar perspective?
I love watching Ohtani. I really do. And whenever you get to see Trout as well, because Ohtani has such incredible international appeal, but Trout is that classic case of, you know, if he walks down the street here in New York, yeah, a baseball fan will notice him, but there's not a stardom that exceeds beyond those borders of baseball, which is tough. But it's time zone is another part of it. You know, after a game, am I staying up and watching a West Coast game? Not all that often, but those are two legitimate superstars. That's why this series is so special. This is as good as it gets with top-end talent. But, man, oh, man, as just a general baseball fan, you've got to hope that Ohtani, and especially Trout, goodness, Trout, gets a real chance and a real run eventually so everybody else can see him.
Love it. Keegan, appreciate you taking the time.
You got it. Take care.
Keegan Mathison, MLB.com, Blue Jays reporter. Jays will be back in action, trying to get two in a row here against the Angels. We're wrapping up hour two, heading into hour three. It's Darren Pang, and it's Dear Andy P.
Love it.
Gonna do that. Stay with us.